Sexism in Silicon Valley, bro grammar culture, 70 cents on the dollar. The tech industry has long been labeled as a male-first corporate culture. But have companies done anything about it since, say, Google went public in 2004? This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton and guest host Julian Guthrie speak with two authors. One has written about male and female brains. The other wrote an internal memo about male and female abilities that got him fired.
Hello, welcome back, and thanks for listening, as always. Not just in employee pay, but in culture generally, gender inequality in Silicon Valley and the entire tech sector really remains a stubborn, seemingly intractable issue. But at least recently, Ellen Powell took her venture capital firm to task in court and in a new book. Tomes, dissertations, and op-ed pieces have been cranked out for decades about this, and a recent internal memo at Google went external. In the memo, the author concluded that women were not as well suited for tech work as males. James Damore was fired for that memo. For this week's Techonomics, we want to keep the conversation going around this stubborn issue with a rational discussion with differing stakeholders. James Damore tells us about his position, why he wrote the memo, and even some regret over a choice of diction. We also have Dr. Luann Brizendine. She is a neuropsychiatrist who is a researcher, clinician, and professor at the University of California, San Francisco. She is author of two books, The Female Brain and The Male Brain. Also joining me to keep the conversation going is Julian Guthrie. Julian is the author of How to Build a Spaceship. She's hosted Techonomics before. She's a veteran journalist, and she's a friend of the show. Here's part one of this week's four segments on gender inequality in tech.
James Damore. I guess I was a senior software engineer at Google.
And
Dr. Luann Brizendine. I'm a neuropsychiatrist and author of The Female Brain from UCSF.
Well, thank you both for joining me this morning. My name is Jason Middleton. I'm the host of Techonomics. I'm also joined on a special edition, if you will, with Julian Guthrie, who has done this show with me before. Julian, go ahead and introduce yourself, please.
Good morning. I'm Julian Guthrie, and I'm a journalist and an author, and I'm working on a new book called Alpha Girls, and it's the story of a certain group of women in Silicon Valley.
Well, thank you all for being here this morning. James, I'd like to start with you, please, and just as a little bit of background, let's talk about the memo first, and then we can get into some of the assertions and some of the outcomes. I'm wondering what the prep was like for the memo before it was published internally, and then I'm going to ask you, of course, did you expect it to get leaked? But what was the prep?
I talked with many people within Google, all the diversity programs, and my coworkers, and then I also read a lot into the literature and just watched a ton of videos and read a ton.
And when you say you were in the literature, were you talking about like Google's internal hiring and firing policy, that kind of stuff?
That, and also, you know, actual books written on the subject.
You're a trained biologist as well, is that correct?
Yeah, I was doing biology at Harvard before I joined Google.
Can I ask what you were doing at Google? Because that's a pretty cool transition.
Yeah, I was doing the infrastructure for image and video search.
And it's interesting that when you were talking about what you were reading, can you add to that a little bit in terms of the books you were reading? Did you come across Dr. Luann Brizendine's The Female Brain or The Male Brain? Did that come into your reading list?
Yeah, I've definitely seen them. I unfortunately haven't read them. There's just so much on the topic. They're on my to-do list. The Blank Slate by Steven Pinker was one of my, I guess, biggest inspirations.
And was there one thing, or it was just cumulative in terms of what prompted you to write Google's ideological echo chamber, as you titled it?
There were definitely multiple events and, you know, multiple interactions I had with my coworkers and what I saw through all of our company-wide emails and meetings. But it was one program in particular where they said that they were doing some things that seemed like they were illegal, and they explicitly asked for my feedback, so I decided to write that document.
That's a lot of research that went into that. What was the program called that you deemed possibly illegal?
So it was some of our hiring practices, and also I talked with many different managers, and they said that they were encouraged, and they actually did use someone's race or gender when deciding who to hire for their team.
Doesn't Google have a relatively interesting and unique peer review process? And was that part of what you were researching as well? Was it wasn't just a top-down management performance review, right? It also comes in from lateral places and horizontally?
Yeah, for our performance reviews, you need maybe 5 to 7 different people. And it's not just your managers, but also the people that you're working with.
The only reason I ask that question is because I was wondering how some of your assertions in the article that you wrote, which we'll get into in just a moment, I wonder how that could affect the peer review process. Could it have been seen that some of those assertions may have been potentially liable on the other side of it? If you're reviewing somebody else's career or opportunities moving forward, maybe that would limit them?
I really doubt if someone reads my document in detail, because I say many times that we shouldn't treat individuals differently, and that this is more just trying to explain why we see fewer women in the population working in tech.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, Google, as progressive as it is under investigation right now by the Labor Department. And the data show that at 5 of the 6 job levels that were independently looked at, that Google is consistently paying women employees less than men, and which is pretty astounding, which really doesn't have anything to do with gender. But I mean, clearly it's discrimination and it's illegal. But is that something that you were responding to?
Not so much. A little bit. So at least the internal Google response to that has always been that they've been doing this analysis themselves for many years, and they don't really see a gender gap once you control for all the factors, including performance. And so that's what the external government agency doesn't have access to right now, the actual performance reviews. And part of what I've been responding to is the general narrative that is saying that, you know, women are always the victim. And that, I think, is damaging to both women and men.
I know since the event, I've seen a couple of headlines, and I have to mention that you've even said that being politically conservative at Google is kind of like being gay in the 50s. Is that still your assertion right now?
I think maybe that's an exaggeration, but I think that it has many parallels, because they feel like they have to stay in the closet, and if they do show that they're conservative, then they're openly discriminated against. And there are these re-education camps, essentially, where they try to, you know, re-educate them to be progressive.
I don't think I'd go through that personally. I think I would push back against that.
Yeah.
Well, James, do you think that you were perpetuating gender stereotypes, or in the end, were you trying to analyze them and even clarify?
Yeah, I mean, I was really trying to get to the bottom of what are some average differences between males and females and how we can leverage that to make the workplace more favorable to women.
Well, one of those assertions, and I'm just summarizing, and feel free to correct me if you want, is a lack of a killer instinct or competitive nature in a female brain as opposed to a male brain. That was one of them that called out, which is why we asked Dr. Brizendine to join us this morning, too. Can we go into a little bit of the assertions within the article?
Yeah, sure.
Right. So this would be a great place to bring Luann Brizendine in. I mean, interesting that, you know, one of the things that you said that drew, I think, stirred a lot of criticism was that on average, women have more, quote unquote, neuroticism as defined as, quote, higher anxiety, lower stress tolerance. Now, So explain that a little bit. And then, Luann, if you would jump in with your great expertise on the subject, and maybe you two won't actually disagree on this.
Neuroticism is just one of the big 5 personality traits. And so it's definitely unfortunate that it has the root neurotic, but it's been seen in multiple different countries, and the gap between men and women is even larger in gender egalitarian countries. At least the evolutionary psychology reason why women seem to have more of this, of neuroticism, is that they need to worry for their children. And so that is the evolutionary advantage if a female is constantly worrying about their child.
That was the first segment of this week's conversation around gender inequality in Silicon Valley and the tech sector. James Damore is the author of the Google memo, where he concluded women were not of the right temperament to succeed in tech. Dr. Luann Brizendine is a neuropsychiatrist and the author of two books on the subject, The Male Brain and The Female Brain. Also joining me on the chat, you heard Julian Guthrie, a journalist, an author, and a fill-in host on Techonomics. All four of this week's segments are online at kgoradio.com/techonomics. There are also longer web-only versions. Just look for the story that goes with this week's show and click away. Coming up, part two of four with all of our guests as we discuss the technical definition of and negative reaction to the word neurotic. I'm Jason Middleton. This is Techonomics. Please come on back. Yeah.